family, I give you the December calendar. We're gonna be pretty busy.
It needs more glitter.
Noted.
Why is 4 p.m. Eastern Time on December 31st triple circled?
That's the deadline to open an Ohio 529 plan and get this year's Ohio tax deduction.
Can't we just do it today?
Can we?
Well, that would be genius.
I'll get the glitter.
Start Ohio's 529 plan before the year-end deadline at collegeadvantage.com.
Moncrief on News Talk.
It is time for the parenting slot. Joanna Fortune is with us once again. Afternoon, Joanna.
Afternoon, Sean.
Right, here's the first question. I have two kids, a girl aged 10, a boy aged 12. Like all siblings, they sometimes get in each other's at times and they can really push each other's buttons. They do to a large degree get on fine. The issue is when my son does annoy my daughter, she will spiral and get so mad at him, sometimes they have to physically remove her from the room. I end up getting annoyed with my son for winding her up, but to be honest, sometimes he's not even doing it intentionally, or what he's done may have been quite mild, but once she starts to get mad, she's unable to calm down. A regular situation is he'll start to tell a story. If she keeps interrupting him, he'll give up on telling it, and then she goes bananas because she does actually want to know what happened. Part of me thinks, fair enough, he got fed up, but once he refuses to finish, he won't budge, and she's going ballistic. I end up mad with him. Another regular bone of contention is play fighting. She often initiates this, but goes mad when he hurts her, sometimes the result of a reflex reaction. For example, if she sat on him and as a reflex, he's pushed her off. She has started the play fighting, not him. So how do I resolve their respective complaints? Hers because she's hurt, him because he wasn't the one who started it. He was reacting to being sat on. I do find I've quite a low tolerance for screaming, and my daughter is quite vocal when she's upset. So unfortunately, my son is getting a lot of negativity as a result of her behaviour. At the same time, he can be very stubborn and will never let an argument go. He'll insist he's right to the end when, if he let the small things go, things wouldn't escalate the way they do.
I mean,
oh gosh, yeah.
Like, cut them loose, see what happens, Lord of the Flies style. But this is just two kids managing to make their parent dizzy.
Yes.
And yeah. Dizzy fixing a problem that isn't yours to fix. That's the bottom line. They're 10 and 12. They're at a peak age gap there for sibling rivalry. They're both coming into that preteen, on the cusp of adolescent stage.
Oh, yeah.
So you've a whole lot of other stuff going on there. They sound like they're irritating each other perfectly within the range of typical sibling irritation. Though there's a couple of things, though, Sean, that jump out at me. Like when the letter says, my daughter has difficulty or she's unable to calm down. Now, she's 10 years old. So, I mean, I don't have massive expectations for kids to calm in the history of being stressed. None of us really calm ourselves down terribly well. But she is of an age where emotionally we would expect her to be able to self-regulate within her developmental area.
Mm.
She should be able to calm down, walk away, recognize there's a line, know there's buttons to be pushed, and that if I do this, this is the likely outcome. Actually, now I need to walk away, take a break and come back a bit calmer. So I'm curious that she's not doing that and how quickly her distress, her dysregulation, if you like, but her distress and agitation is being transferred onto the parent who wrote into us.
Yeah.
And it then is quickly becoming your difficulty to deal with. When we've sibling rivalry going on in our house, and I'm saying when, because this is everyone's house to varying extents, what you have to avoid doing is exactly what's happening here. You're getting pulled in as a referee into their fights. You cannot win that.
Mm.
Like, you are not going to win. As soon as you chastise him, he's going to say, that's so unfair. I didn't start it. Then you tell her to stop. I can't believe you're having a go at me. I'm hurt and upset.
Yeah.
You're letting him hurt me. You can't win that. And this comes up with so many examples of sibling rivalry where, you know, that's my turn, his turn, her turn. The best thing that this parent could do here to avoid getting activated themselves in the process is accept that when you say, how do I resolve their respective complaints, they are not yours to resolve.
Mm-hmm.
And you say, I believe in the two of you and your ability to work this out. You guys started it. You guys can finish it. They're 10 and 12. Walk away.
Okay.
Let them at it.
Yeah.
Now, let them at it now to a certain point, obviously.
Yes.
You know, if it's going to, they're hurting each other or the space or whatever, with safety in mind, let them at it. See how they work this out, because actually it's really important that we develop skills for, you know, conflict resolution, solution focused thinking.
Yeah.
This is an opportunity. Siblings are our first experience of best friends and worst enemies rolled into one, you know, and it can change on a daily basis. I think what you do is you redirect them to work it out. And I think build in a practice in your family that all of you, not just your son and daughter, but all of you do one nice thing every day for someone else in the family.
Yeah.
And you encourage them to do it. Now, one nice thing could be putting their pajamas on the radiator before bed in the evening so they're warmed up. It doesn't have to be something huge, making a cup of tea or stacking the dishwasher when you weren't asked to, you know, things like that. But you put in a practice of kind, small, kind actions every day, because if they're doing something nice, to come up with that or to spot the opportunity to do something nice, I have to be thinking about you in a more positive way.
Mm.
Even if we're bickering and fighting, I still have to have a moment in the day where I'm like, you do really like that chocolate bar. I'll leave that one for you and I'll take the other one.
Yeah.
And just do that nice thing. I just think if you're asking your 12-year-old son if he could let small things go, things wouldn't escalate. That is a really big ask of a 12-year-old.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I actually don't think that's fair. I think he's behaving as any 12-year-old would behave in this situation. Redirection, distraction is your best thing. If, though, as you're listening, and you're saying, look, my daughter does go up, up, up and away, and it's really hard to get her down, be aware that your own low tolerance for screaming is leaving her swinging in the wind with that dysregulation a bit, because actually she needs you to kind of go, OK, hang on, I'm in the driving seat here. I'm going to bring you down, not sort him out.
Yeah,
I'm going to bring you down. Let's think and talk about this. But if your own kind of activation is, I don't like screaming, so you kind of pull away from her and say to him, just stop making her scream. She's left alone with that distress and she's clearly struggling to self-regulate. If that's something you're spotting as a pattern, she's 10 years old, I would consider just consulting with somebody about that. Nothing now massive scary, don't hear that as scary, but just, you know, somebody who could do some play-based work with her to just help her with that regulation so that she can get irritated. That's quite a normal response, but that she is able to come down as well within that.
Yeah, because I'd be interested to know, can the daughter be like that in other situations?
Exactly.
Or is it just him? Because,
or,
you know, the way siblings know,
totally.
I can just press that button
and she's right. He's proving her right over and over. And she's also initiating the play fighting, which is the biggest bone of contention going on. So there is, but sometimes, Sean, like the effort not to be like that outside of home, like a lot of kids make huge effort to mask those struggles they have outside of the house. And then they come home exhausted and kind of fizzy, you know, fizzy kids, and they're buzzing. And all it takes is, all right, I really need to scratch this itch. I really need to release this tension. You'll do nicely. I'll poke the bear. I can predict what you're going to do. I can be right about it. And all of that drama is leaving me. And I'm going, oh, I feel much better now. You're all irritated, but I feel much better.
And she knows it's kind of a safe environment with which to do that.
Exactly.
Because Mammy would intercede.
100%.
Yeah. Right. I like this question because I feel like a lot of parents have maybe found themselves in this kind of thing. I'd love to get some advice about what I should do about an incident that occurred recently with my child's friend. My youngest is 7 and last week he had his little friend over for a play date. Everything was fine for the first few hours, but things took a turn for the worse when I walked into the playroom to discover my son in tears and his friend smashing up my son's favourite toy that he just recently got for his birthday. I comforted my son, but didn't say anything to the boy, as I believe it's not my place to discipline other people's kids. The following week, my son went on a play date to that boy's house. When he returned, I noticed that he was slapping his younger siblings. Later that day during dinner, he told me to shut up. I put him in a timeout for 6 minutes. He's 6, but he stamped and cried the entire time. When I eventually took him out of the timeout, he told me it was unfair because the other boy's parents don't make him do that. His behaviour has definitely changed since he befriended this boy in junior infants. I don't know how I'm supposed to discipline my child if he sees other kids acting out with no repercussions. Should I broach the subject with the other boy's parents? If I do, how should I do it?
Really interested in what other people listening now think of this. So I'm going to give a viewpoint on it. And there's a couple of points in this, Sean, I do want to pick up on. First of all, the first problem with that play date was the few hours. You were a few hours in when this incident happened. I'm like, how long was that play date?
Yes,
like, these are 6-year-old children. Honestly, 90 minutes, maybe 2 hours if they play really well together.
Yeah.
Is a anything longer than that is childcare. That's not a play date. And if you have a reciprocal arrangement with another parent where, yeah, you cover each other in a childcare, dressing it up as a play date, great. But that's a lot of get on with each other, play nicely, share your stuff to ask of kids. So I'd be, if you're having play dates, bring them way, way in on time. The other thing is your son came home from this friend's house where you're learning that, you know, there's certainly, if there are rules, they're very lax, inconsistent, and things go up and down. He came home, he hit his siblings, he told you to shut up, absolutely unacceptable, totally get that. But putting him on a timeout at 6 years old, now you know I don't love timeouts, okay? So I won't go on that soapbox, but just to say he is too young to self-regulate out of that kind of agitated state. And then he sits in his timeout and he stamped and cried the entire time. What happened there? Like he's dysregulated. You pull him away from you and you say, feel better on your own and come back and make a repair. Absolutely not. There are grown adults who can't do that. Like a six-year-old definitely can't. Try to do time in, separate him from the field of action, you know, whatever he's doing or saying. Even get outside with him. Let him kick a ball against the wall. Come on in and talk to me about what's going on. Do something else that's going to bring him down. But also, if you're looking cause and effect wise, he's not typically like this by the sounds of it.
Yeah.
He came home from a situation. Get curious. What has you feeling this way? You're not yourself.
Yeah. Yeah.
Approach it with empathy. And I think you'd actually correct the behavior within the connection you have with him. So I always go connection over correction. I think that was a little bit quick to correction. Then the question about, should I broach the subject with the other? I'd love to know, which subject are we talking about? Their parenting style, their lack of discipline, or their son's behaviour?
Yeah, that's all three, really, isn't it? Yeah.
I think as parents, you could have done this when he broke the toy. You know, when he was over, you could say, well, you're not going to discipline someone else's child. I fully agree with that. But he is in your home under your supervision, and in your home, your rules apply. And
yes,
you can hold boundaries, you know, with other people's children, say, hey, we don't do that in here. That's not how we treat toys. So we're going to leave the playroom and you guys can go outside and do something else. Console your son, get them set up in another activity. You absolutely could do that and then say to the parents when the handover back is, look, I did have to say something about breaking a toy. It was really upsetting for my son. Just in case he says it to you, I said, we don't do that here. And I put them outside to play football out of the playroom instead and close the playroom door.
Yeah.
You absolutely could say that.
Mm.
Now, time has gone by. I'm curious, how would you bring this up?
Yeah.
You know, and my son came home from your house misbehaving. We think it's your son's fault is a really difficult conversation to have, you know. Let's be honest about it. None of us want to be. Sorry, what? Why is it my son's fault? I'd be curious what your son likes about this boy. He's six. I'm guessing they're senior infants at this stage. They've been friends since junior infants. This is a little friendship that is sustaining because it's quite normal for kids to be friends 1 minute and not the other at this age. But these two kids are sustaining a connection. What do they like about each other? You know, so get curious about that. I think you're better off talking to your son about what you expect from him. In this family, we don't speak to each other like that. In this family, we don't hit each other. And I don't say, don't do that. I would always say in this family, because you're learning in other families, different rules apply.
Yes.
And you are responsible for your son in your house. So when he says, my friend doesn't have to do this, you could say, well, there's different rules in his house, but in this house, I won't be allowing it. And you make your boundaries explicit and clear. Often our kids, they get this experience, Shauna, going to other people's houses and there's different ways of doing things. And they're like, well, that's interesting. Let me give that a go at home and see what happens. And they're just testing boundaries and trying things out. What they need from us is that we hold the boundary in response.
Yeah.
I think unless you're nipping whatever this other kid did in the bud in the moment, I think it's hard to bring it up now as time has gone by. But I would be changing the structure of those play dates and I would consider having them as an activity-based play date out in the park.
Yes.
Playing for an hour, dropping them home afterwards.
Yeah. Because I'd say probably there isn't a parent alive that hasn't had that experience. If a child comes into their house and they're... And sometimes children can go from their own house and then test the boundaries in their friend's house.
Absolutely, they
can. To see what that's like.
Yeah.
You know, and then the parent doesn't know what to do then.
No, it's... But play dates shouldn't be hours and hours and hours. That's too much to ask of children.
Yeah. It's coming up to Christmas and already my daughter and her friends are picking things out and writing their lists. One of her friends is asking for 10 big presents. The girl is prone to mood swings and can have meltdowns in public. On the other hand, my daughter is an angel. Well, not quite an angel, but really well behaved, mannerly and all in all, just a great little girl. The problem is my daughter, knowing how polite and well behaved she is, really hopes to get the 3 big presents she's asked for. The other little girl has also asked for similar presents and I can only assume she will get them. Money doesn't seem to be an issue there. It breaks my heart to say it, but I can't really afford all 3. I'm a single mother. Her father is in her life and contributes, but all 3 presents just aren't feasible. I want to try and manage expectations, letting my daughter know that even if she doesn't get everything she wants, it's not a reflection of her behaviour. I'm really worried she'll have a bad Christmas if she wakes up on Christmas morning to find she hasn't got what she asked for. She's convinced that she's not on the nice list and told me she thinks she'll get all the presents because she's being really good in school. How do I handle a situation like this without ruining the magic of Christmas for my daughter?
Okay. I think that's really relatable, Sean.
Yeah.
I don't care what your financial means are. 10 big presents, 3-4 big presents is excessive.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's overwhelming for children. And it's absolutely normal for children to want things.
Of course.
That doesn't
yeah.
mean they get things.
Yeah.
You know, so a good reminder of that, I always keep a little rhyme in my head, you know, for Christmas, get them one thing they want, one thing they need, one thing to wear, one thing to read. And I just think it keeps us all in boundaries, stops
yes.
us all losing the run of ourselves. And I just think remind your daughter that Santa has to bring every child something that they want. And it isn't possible for Santa to bring everything to everyone.
Mm.
So Santa will make a choice. So either she puts her 3 big things on her letter and Santa will choose one thing from that 3. Or if there's one out of that 3 she wants more than the others, just ask for that one.
Yeah.
And maybe add in on your letter that if Santa could bring a little surprise as well, that would be great.
Yeah.
And that Santa can choose a small surprise around that big gift. But I think our kids, this is a hyper-stimulating time of year. There's catalogues, there's ads, there's friends, there's lots of chat about this. And actually, children do understand when you explain, oh, Santa's not going to be able to bring all that stuff. So pick one thing, ask for a little surprise, and that's what we'll stick to. And again, it's a little bit like what we were talking about a minute ago, when our children say to us, but so-and-so can ask for anything they want. And that doesn't mean everybody's getting what they're asking
no,
for.
Just
hold that
yeah.
in mind. But again, you're just saying, I think the fairest thing for all children in the world for Santa is to remember he can't bring everything that everyone wants. Pick one thing and ask for that.
Yeah. And it's good for them developmentally to have to make kind of those kind of
I think it's
choices about things.
Absolutely. Because, you know, you could say, oh, I want them all. Okay, well, think what you play with most, they have to make choices. They have to really prioritize things within that and really express a desire. It's a really good learning experience. And there's a lot of pro-social skills in that. And also just, you know, you're afraid she'll be very disappointed. I just think on Christmas morning, there's so much going on and there's so much excitement that Santa has been. She won't be disappointed.
Yeah, absolutely not. And sure, the friends are always saying, well, you know,
absolutely.
I'm going to get 27 presents.
And look how early Christmas is starting for everyone.
I know,
so
it's
just
mad,
try
isn't it?
Slow it down a bit. There's weeks and weeks to go yet.
Yeah, there is.
There really is. Yeah.
I'm tired even thinking about it, really. Joanna, thanks
Thank
a million
you.
As ever. Joanna Fortune there.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.
Family, I give you the December calendar. We're going to be pretty busy.
It needs more glitter.
Noted.
Why is 4 p.m. Eastern Time on December 31st triple circled?
That's the deadline to open an Ohio 529 plan and get this year's Ohio tax deduction.
Can't we just do it today?
Can we?
Well, that would be genius.
I'll get the glitter.
Start Ohio's 529 plan before the year-end deadline at collegeadvantage.com.